Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Scope. It's the only show that's part of this complete breakfast. I'm your announcer, Tony Partington. Coming up on this edition of The Scope,
we discuss our favorite games for the Nintendo Entertainment System. Shane refuses to answer his phone. Plus, coming soon, Hit It or Miss It, and your comments.
And now, here are your hosts, Jarrett, Adam, and Shane.
Hey, everybody from Scopeland. Episode 160 of your favorite podcast slash videocast.
Vodcast. Vaudeville.
Slash. I think more of a vidcast. Not really even a vidcast. It's Kidcast. Just a YouTube channel.
Kidcast slash steampunk information zone.
We're more of a zine, right?
We're sort of a zine. We just cut out little pieces of dilapidated photos. We paste them together. We photocopy them.
Yeah, yeah. It's a real cottage industry.
I don't do that. I just use the ransom note font.
Oh, I like
that. Does it all for me.
That's lazy. That's a lazy zine maker if there ever was one.
Yeah. Well, you got to buy multiple copies of Cosmopolitan and just chop out the headlines. That's how you get your letters.
Like the Bodyguard?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly like that.
Best movie of the 90s.
Of course it is.
I will always love you.
We are gathered here
too,
today.
Jared.
We are gathered here today in a very cold and chilly December afternoon.
We are gathered here today in the house called the... I don't know. Go ahead.
Oh, my goodness. We are in our third consecutive week, and we have got a doozy of a show planned.
Oh, goodness.
You know, we've talked about my Xbox One adventures in the past few weeks. It's been crazy. We've been getting a lot of use out of that. But I thought that it might be a little more interesting if we look back at some of the older consoles and talk about the games that most affected us. Mm. So we've got a new segment called Scope Video Game Essentials.
I like it.
We'll be delving into that shortly. I don't have a lot to say, Jared. I really want to keep the show short.
Yeah.
Adam,
we're
not
doing a good job
that?
On the first
sure.
two here, so.
So let's just do this.
Yeah.
We're going to jump right into our video game talk. We'll be back with video game talk. We'll be back with coming soon and all of what you love about The Scope right after these messages.
Yes. This is the Fall Twerk. Twerk. Do, 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 do. Twerk, twerk, twerk. Do, do.
Jesus wants your donations. He came to Earth so he could die.
That doesn't make sense.
Okay, then we'll move on. Have you heard of Islam?
It's not about the Wookiee.
That's the Funny Music Project at thefump.com. thefump.com.
It's all about the Wookiee. It's all about the Wookiee. It's all about the Wookiee.
Hey, everybody, we're back. Episode 160. It's chilly outside, but it's warm in here, boys.
Mm-hmm. The advantage of being in the basement in the winter is it gets warmer down here.
It does.
Kind of nice.
Today, we are bringing you a new segment. I teased it earlier, and I actually gave the name of it. We're calling it Scope Video Game Essentials. So what we're going to do, it's pretty simple. I am picking a past video game console. And then the three of us will each pick three games.
I still love how you say console.
3DO, right? We're doing 3DO today?
3DO.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you Jared's never even played a 3DO.
I think I played the demo unit we had at Toys R Us.
There we go, back in the day.
Mm-hmm. The best, what was the motorcycle kicking game?
Road Rash.
The best Road Rash.
They had a good Road Rash. They had a good Madden on there. They had a good Madden on there.
That might have been it.
And that's it. Everything else was terrible.
They had a helicopter game. I forget what it was called.
Choplifter. Next.
No, it wasn't Choplifter. It was something else. Doesn't matter. Go ahead.
So the system I picked for us to take a look back at today is the Granddaddy. It's pretty much the kickoff of the modern video game age.
The Magnavox Odyssey?
Yeah, of course.
Sweet.
I'm talking about the Nintendo Entertainment System.
It's
an 8-bit system released in 1985 in America, released in 83 in Japan.
July 15th.
It took 2 years to get here.
That was known as the Famicom over there, right?
Do you know the story about how it got here?
Return Fire. That's the name of the 3DO helicopter.
He's looked it up already. Tell us how it got here, Adam.
Nintendo was trying really hard to get their console, however you say it, in America. And,
console? Console, as some other people say.
Years earlier was the big video game crash.
Yeah, 1983 is where the video game industry went in the crapper here, which is crazy. It was only 2 years. You would think that the gap would have been longer, by the way.
But. And so no electronic stores wanted to carry them, so they worked
because video
with,
games were over.
Yes.
We're done with them.
They worked.
You had a good run.
Throw. What's the word on the street?
The same company.
You'll never work in this town again.
Saying there's a chance.
Put out Teddy Ruxpin.
Teddy Ruxpin, World's of Wonder.
Yes.
That was
the
company.
They set up a deal, and so basically World's of Wonder said, all right, Toys R Us, if you want Teddy Ruxpin, the biggest
toy
in the 85-86 holiday
also
season.
Makers of laser tag.
Oh, yes. Oh yeah. I had laser tag.
If you want either of those, you have to carry a Nintendo, and they got some cut also. Mm-hmm. And so they did, and they got in and blew up.
And we never had Toys R Us here at that time, so there was probably
Palace.
A year when you didn't even see it. Yep, Children's Palace was our toy story.
This was their deal, not just Toys R Us, it was all toy stores.
Gotcha. So. Okay, interesting.
Yep.
I like that.
Well, thank you for that color. Well, with the Nintendo being released in America, mm-hmm. it completely changed and revitalized the video game world, and video games have been a powerhouse on these shores ever since. So let's take a look at the games that made the system, but more specifically, the games that made the system for us.
Mm-hmm.
I've asked everyone to pick a handful of games, hopefully three. It looks like Adam has 18 in his. He never listens.
I have three with a couple of backups in case we had some overlap.
I do, too. So, well, let's start with Jared.
Oh.
Jared, give us a game that you both loved and maybe was a good game. Maybe not a good game. I don't know.
Talk about something that impacted you. My list is definitely skewed towards ones that I have personal experience with and that I have maybe some stories around.
Okay.
And my experience with the NES is very early. I got it right away. I had saved up my paper route money with my brother. And so we had the system right away.
Did you get it with the robot?
We did not. We just got the base system. Okay. Didn't even get the gun.
The control deck.
That's exactly it. Control deck. Stop that. we probably played it for a couple years, and then in the back end of the system, I had completely fallen out. I didn't.
Sure.
So there's a gap between my NES playing and when I got a Super Nintendo, mm-hmm. where I just didn't care for whatever reason.
Those girl chasing days.
Yeah,
of
you
yours.
Know me. Oof, playing, getting out there.
seems sad.
My game is actually, I believe, one of the launch games for the system, but it is not the main launch game. I pick Excitebike.
Oh, that's a good game.
Excitebike was really, really fun. I remember playing it in the arcade and having a good enough time with it, but for some reason, playing it at home was just tons and tons of fun.
Didn't cost a quarter when you did that,
no,
Jared.
It did not. And so we would race. You could race solo. You could race with two people. But the most exciting feature of it was definitely the track builder.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And you could build your own custom tracks, and you could make them crazy for your friends or brother to play. Or you could just make them awesome. And, we did a little of both. The one thing I realized after doing my research here is that it didn't have a save feature.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, so what was the save?
There was no save.
So you just played it? You couldn't enter a code to save it?
No, because it was... I don't know how you would generate a code for that because it was so custom. I mean, you had predefined, jumps and track parts that you could assemble. So it wasn't like you could just draw whatever you wanted.
Sure,
but,
sure.
Yeah, I mean, that was a lot of fun. There was always, like, you tried to put, like, a bunch of moguls in a row to screw up people, or you made... There was, like, a double jump thing that
what
was
about
sort
the
of
mud?
Annoying. Yeah, there's the mud.
You get stuck in the mud.
Or you put grass patches, and you couldn't go very fast through that. So
never put those. All straightaways and the little ramp that made you go the highest.
Yeah.
That's all you do.
If you could somehow... Yeah, and that was sort of the fun that we had, was trying to make optimized tracks. Like, you'd have the big double jump thing, which if you took it normally would be kind of slow to get up and kind of screw up. But if you could put, like, the right jump before it at the right distance, you could sort of rocket to the top of that big jump.
It's amazing,
stuff like that.
It's amazing how much work you could put into something that wasn't going to carry over to the next day when you turn that system off. And that was just
how it was.
You just accepted there was it no, as reality.
There was
that
no
was
battery
it.
Save in those days.
Nope.
So anyway, that's my first pick, Excitebike, from Nintendo, published in 1985.
I love it. That game, I think the handling mechanics for, a dirt bike have maintained 100% since that game. Like, they haven't changed. Press forward to lean forward, press back to lean back.
That's great. And you could, like, stop in front of other riders and screw them up, like, knock them off. That's great. Good times.
Well, I will, speaking on the customization conversation.
Do it.
I will announce my first game, and mm-hmm. I think Adam and I might be fighting because I think he has a competitor to this game on his list.
Okay.
I am picking a game made by SNK, yep. released in 1989, so it's getting closer to the end of the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm speaking about the best baseball game ever made, Baseball Stars. Now, Baseball Stars was awesome because you could create your own team.
Yep.
You could change all the players' names on the team.
Mm-hmm.
You could make a league where it would save it. They had save feature functionality by this, where you could have a league up to 125 games. It also had like quasi-role-playing elements to it, where within your league, if you did well, you'd get money, which then you could upgrade your players, and you play through the championship. It had realistic movement. You had fielding where, you know, you could jump up and grab the ball over the wall. Everything was just perfect on this game. I absolutely loved it. And I remember very, very clearly making teams of all my friends and then making teams of people I didn't like or things, and I would play them, and of course I would always win and destroy them. And this was one of the first video games I ever played where I probably put more hours into it than I care to imagine. And I always played
more than Skyrim?
I know. It's hard. It was a precursor to Skyrim. Okay. And I did it all by myself because I was sad and lonely and without friends in 1989. So I picked Baseball Stars. Adam, what's your pick?
I played the Nintendo Arcade Baseball or whatever. Sure. Quite a bit.
I played that game too.
Could you customize in that one?
I don't think so.
Is that the one where Mario was just every player?
Yes, maybe. Mario was every player.
I have I have memories of playing a Nintendo baseball game and creating the 1987 World Series Minnesota Twins team.
It may have been loaded.
Maybe that was it. I don't know. I'm trying to remember that. I'm trying to remember if I could actually create the team or if I just pretended they were the players. It could be either, but
there were three main games. There was Baseball Stars, Bases Loaded, and maybe the game that Adam's going to talk about.
Yes. My pick, and as soon as you said what we were going to be doing here, immediately I wrote this down. RBI Baseball 3. RBI Baseball 3 was the main one that came to the U.S. There were a couple updates after that. It's based on a Japanese game. It was licensed by from the MLB PA, so they had all real players, all the real teams in it. And up until that point, I had mostly played Bases Loaded, which had fake real teams. You know, like, so instead of, like, the Baltimore Orioles, they had, like, the Washington team.
They couldn't get the license.
And, like, no one looked the same because there wasn't looks, but, like,
the Minneapolis Dualites.
Yeah. But, like, you knew, like, oh, that first baseman who's black is Frank Thomas or whatever.
And it's always color with you.
Well, so otherwise they were yellowish white. I played this game. It's similar to your story,
I think. It's very similar.
And me and my friend DJ, like, it's all we played.
But he had friends. See how he brought it? He played with DJ.
Yep.
And
where was Michelle?
It was a very frustrating game.
And Uncle Jesse.
Wow.
Because
he was playing with the cast of Full House, Jared. He just watched Full House.
I sat up my Care Bear next to me. I said, you're DJ. You play. I struck him out every time. It was great. In this game, you picked your pitches. And some of the pitches were nearly unhittable. So, like, Gary Gaetti had a sinker, and you couldn't tell it was a sinker until you couldn't hit it. Because
Gary Gaetti had a sinker,
wasn't it Gary Gaetti?
He was a third baseman.
Oh yeah,
no, he
right.
was a third base. Was he?
Who am I thinking?
Yeah,
Gaetti was a third baseman.
You had Frank Viola at the time.
No, I can't remember who I'm thinking of. His last
Jack
name,
Morris.
No, he played for like the Mets. His last name.
Oh, Dwight Gooden.
Like
Daryl Strawberry. No,
a pasta. Like Rigatoni or something.
Yeah, Johnny Rigatoni had a great...
Anyway.
Are you sure it wasn't Pete Linguini?
He had a sinker, and you didn't know it was a sinker, so you swung at it, but I don't think there was a way to hit a sinker.
Didn't hit it. Well, see, Baseball Stars had the same thing, where you could throw a sinker where it could not be hit, but sometimes when it was thrown, it wouldn't sink. So even the pitcher didn't know, so sometimes you could hit it.
Okay.
That's why Baseball Stars is better. Done. Next.
So the one interesting thing about this game I wanted to mention, it was made by Tengen.
Yep.
Their cartridges looked different than most Nintendo cartridges.
What was the difference?
They were black and they were rounded instead of, you know, more brick like at the end. They were unlicensed games.
I was going to say, wasn't Tengen the one that initially didn't have licenses?
Yes, and
to
who
Tetris.
Actually owned Tengen? Atari. It was actually Atari's way of getting around Nintendo's license requirements that were later ruled illegal. But the way Tengen was doing it was also illegal, or Atari was doing it was also illegal, so they all got
a lot of people
in trouble at the end.
I can tell you some interesting things. It's not interesting, but when I first started working
at Toys R Us. Well, we should cover it anyway.
First started working at Toys R Us right around 1990 or so. That's, you know, that's just when the Super Nintendo was just about to hit.
Right.
But I remember very clearly that, like, RBI 3, because people just, like, even today...
People still play it today.
People will buy Xbox One, but you'll still have a million people that are playing Xbox 360 and buying games. So back in those days, you had just as a robust Nintendo section as you did Super Nintendo.
Yep.
And that RBI 3 game was always one that people wanted. It was always... Actually, RBI and Baseball Stars were games you could never keep in stock. There was always certain video games that would always be gone, Jared.
I think that's just the mechanics of baseball.
Yeah.
Made it easier to make a game that was playable and fun on some of those early systems. Football is a little more difficult to get something. I mean, yeah, we still had really fun
football games. You had Tecmo Bowl,
but
was
they
your
weren't
winner.
Really. They weren't real football. I mean,
no.
And I think a lot of that comes down to baseball is a game where everything that happens is kind of a one-on-one thing. The pitcher throws to the batter. The batter hits it to the center fielder who has to move to catch it.
Right.
You know, it's like,
unless you get your double play or triple. But for the most part, it's a very paced, easy-to-do game on the 8-bit systems.
Yep. Exactly.
Jared,
we're back to me.
Your next game.
Which one do I want to do next? I'm going to go with the first one on my list. This was a probably one of the first role-playing games ever released for a video game system in the true kind of questing mode. And that is, of course, The Legend of Zelda.
The one
that started it all. Came out in 1987. Had a gold cartridge, fancy gold cartridge in the U.S. And it was the first game that had a battery save.
Sure.
So you could save your progress. I remember seeing the commercials for this and being very, very excited
for it. I remember
that,
too. You'd be like, what the hell is this? Yeah. It's got a gold cartridge, Jared.
Gold, and this is... Top
That's
down
what it was.
Thing.
We were like, what is this?
I had it. I remember.
And it was very complicated. That was the problem for a youngster like
me. It was. And this is on my list for one very specific event.
Yeah.
And that was, I'm guessing it was Super Bowl Sunday, 1988.
Mm-hmm.
And I took my NES over to my friend Thomas's house. You remember him from past shows talking about ghosts. And instead of watching the Super Bowl, we played The Legend of Zelda all the way through, beginning to end, in one Super Bowl Sunday.
That was the Redskins-Broncos matchup that you missed.
Could have been. I didn't care about football then. And I certainly didn't
Redskins
care about
won
not...
45-10.
You did pretty well if you played through... I don't know how many hours you were there for the Super Bowl. But
I think we probably got there early. I mean, yeah, we
You
we
burned that
through.
Thing up, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, we went all the way through the whole game.
Were your parents there, too?
No.
So you just went over to his house?
I think I just went over there.
Second quest, intending
to play... Yeah. No, we didn't get through the second
You're like,
quest.
Mom, can I get a ride over to Thomas's house? Or Tom's house?
I may have rode my bike over. Put the NES in my backpack. I guess this was January, so I probably didn't ride over.
Got a ride.
I don't know.
Parents are like, fine, we'll give you a ride. We'll give you a ride.
But that's my story. And I mean, it's a great game. Yeah. And obviously
a
bunch of games have come since. And if we do a Super Nintendo one of this bit, you can probably guess what one of my three games will be on that one. So.
Or an N64.
Potentially.
You know, it's always there.
So there you go. The Legend of Zelda. The original, not the second one, which I never played.
Link's Quest. Link's Awakening?
Which was not done by the same team.
Yeah,
so.
It was weird side-scroller, and I'm like, nope. So.
Which now they have a sequel to that out for the 3DS, which is one of the big games of...
No, that's a Link to the Past, which is the SNES version you're thinking of.
Oh, I'm confused. Okay. I thought it was a sequel to that.
Did either of you guys play the first Zelda? Is that your thing?
Yeah.
You did?
I never owned it.
I have a similar story to you. I beat it once, probably the second time through.
Yeah.
I had like the Nintendo Power dedicated black book to it. You know, it was like you could buy it for $25.
Sure.
And, like,
I never cheated, but you know.
But I finished it in, I want to say, 8 hours or something doing all that.
Yeah. Well, and I have a story about that, too. I remember the commercials for it being very excited, but I wasn't super rich at that time. So
that was back in the day where they would do video game commercials and still have live-action people.
Yeah,
sure.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah. But at the time, my mom, I lived with my dad, but my mom was, I would visit her on weekends, and I was helping her brother, my uncle, shop, and he was one of those big... Rudy, big guys who was sort of a bully type and whatever, just like kind of intimidating guy, not a bully, but he just had a presence of him.
Sure.
And he was doing like last minute shopping for his kids because that's what guys do. You know, they shop at the very last second. So we're
he was like, I really wish the store was open on Christmas Day.
So. Exactly. And maybe that will happen about 30 years in the future. You never know. So we all went out to our local mall, Burnsville Center, and we were at KB Toys. And he's like, I need to get gifts for my kids. What do I do? Oh, we got a Nintendo. Shane, you helped me pick out games. So I'm like, well, Zelda's a new game, and it's a gold cartridge, Shane, and they have it.
Shane puts on a shopper's hat. I got this covered.
So he got his kid Zelda, and he got him Top Gun, which is the other game.
I remember playing that. Top Gun 2 is better.
They advertised that on TV as well.
You could never land the plane in Top Gun 1.
It was very, very difficult.
Tough.
That was done by the, who did that game? The company that did Double Dribble.
Konami
did Top Gun. So I remember getting that and then playing it on Christmas.
You mean Double Dribble.
Double Dribble, yeah. So that's my Zelda story.
Nice.
So I will pick my next game. This game, also a little bit later in the release life cycle of the NES, came out in 1989, made by Tecmo. Of course, I'm picking the Super Karate Mega Fest Ninja Gaiden.
Wow.
So this features the adventures of Ryu.
Or?
Hayabusa, is that how you say it?
Yeah. Or Ryu.
Or Ryu.
Or Ryu.
Nobody ever knows.
Nobody knows.
So the reason why I like this game is because it was essentially the first game that featured a fully cinema scene game where you're playing and it will cut to, you know, a story that have graphics. Like you'll have parallel scrolling or parallax scrolling.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
And text telling you what's going on. And so you felt like it was an adventure. It felt like it was a movie, which you had never seen before. It also was a really, really hard game in certain points and very, very frustrating. And I remember being over at my mom's, once again, same situation on the weekend, renting this game and just sitting and playing it and trying to beat it within the weekend and finally doing so. I think it had saving. I don't know if it was a battery backup or code, but having it enter codes tended to be a really bad pattern in my life for video games because it was oftentimes easy to screw those up and mess up all your progress, and I'll get to that later. But
yeah,
Ninja Gaiden was a great game. I think it set the stage for doing cinema and movie-type games, and that's where it started right there. Boom. Roasted.
Whoa.
Who are we roasting?
Nobody knows.
Okay. Just roasting the world, apparently.
We're roasting the world. Adam, what is your second selection?
I'm going to go with The Adventures of Lolo.
Oh, my God. Here we go.
Seriously?
Some weird game.
Okay. I really like this game. If you've never seen it before, it is similar to Bomberman.
I'm not mocking you. I wanted to make sure that was what you were talking about.
That's the game that when you went to a video store to rent, that was always the game that was there to rent.
And that's why
just
Adam
like
likes
just like the original Mega Man. Nobody knew what that was, but Mega Man was always there to rent. You couldn't get Mario, but you could always get Mega Man. Go ahead, Adam.
It was a puzzle game, and like I said, it's kind of like Bomberman, where you're one screen and everything's kind of, you know, you can move in kind of a grid fashion, and your objective was just to get to the other side of the room using whatever means possible. You'd move bricks, move little bomb type things or fires in the way of the enemies and stuff. And there were 100 levels, and I just remember that number being like this intimidating thing. And
how am I going to get to that?
Right. And each, level did that thing where it kind of teaches you a new thing, but you don't know it's actually teaching you to then use that in the next level or a few stages
later. It's the kind of model that a lot of mobile games do these days.
Yep. Yes. And it was one of those, like, you couldn't really set it down for a really long time because if you did, you forgot those lessons that you learned. You had to start over. And speaking to what you said earlier, it was a password game.
Oh, a password game.
And, that's something that children don't know ever existed. The only codes they know are, cheat codes.
Yep.
Even that's going to, being done away with. Like, this was a game, you had, a 13 or 25 character code. You had to write down at the end of each level if you wanted to continue from that
I'll get
point.
To that on my next game because it was utterly vicious.
These days, the concept of even having to manually save your game, kids don't understand that.
No.
You
get one letter wrong, forget it.
So it came out in 89, which was the same year that the Game Boy came out.
Oh, the good Game Boy.
And so I didn't have a Game Boy, but a bunch of my friends did, and I played Tetris a bunch on that. So, the whole idea of games don't just have to be, your man running from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen.
Yeah.
There can be, puzzle elements to it. That really caught on.
Just a screen going up and down is amazing. You know, oh, my God, you're shooting from top to bottom instead of left to right.
So there you go.
Adventures of Lolo.
The Adventures of Lolo, people. Check it out.
Indeed.
Jared, your final selection.
My final selection. I don't know if this is this make a lot of people's best of list. Maybe it would, but I'm going with the Mike Tyson's Punch Out. Oh, Punch Out with 2 exclamation points.
People love that game.
And not just Punch Out, the Mike Tyson.
It's
got to
be the Mike Tyson version.
Oh, yeah. I got the Mike Tyson.
Controversial.
Again, this is another one where I played it in the arcade, and I kind of enjoyed the arcade game. And then
why did you enjoy it, Jared? There's one reason why you enjoyed it. You had the giant red button that you could hit for the mega
room.
Yeah.
I guess.
Boom!
I forgot about that. But the arcade run was obviously a little more advanced than the NES one. The arcade one, you had sort of a silhouette of your character.
Yeah.
And it was more, the perspective was more straight on.
Yep.
The Nintendo one was obviously more limited. Yeah. You had smaller characters, and so they tend to
Your
the
guy
angle
was
up.
About this tall, and then you're fighting somebody that's
it's
this
a scrawny
tall.
Little teenager.
Hey, your name
character.
Was Tiny Mac. What do you want?
No, he was tiny.
But for some reason, I played the hell out of this game.
Of course,
I
did.
Memorized all of the patterns of the
that was
fighters.
The game, right? Yeah. Memorizing patterns.
You knew
all
when like they would go and charge up, and you knew how long, and then you'd have to like count how many like bum bum bum, and then you would dodge, and then you would throw your flurry of blows. Just great game. I actually beat it. I beat it all the way. I beat Mike Tyson.
Who do you like, Glass Joe or Bald Bull?
I was more of a Bald Bull.
Bald
guy.
Bull guy.
I hated Bald Bull.
Glass Joe's like the first guy you fight, isn't it?
Yes.
He goes down like glass, baby.
He does. He's very easy. But yeah, I was very proud that I made it all the way through and beat Mike Tyson. That was a crowning achievement
Thank
for
you
me
very
in,
much.
In 1987.
It
when
felt
the game
like
came out.
I remember feeling like he doesn't have a pattern. This sucks. I did not.
But did
like
he have a pattern?
Him. Of course he did.
He
I
did.
Just couldn't
but it was
it
much more difficult.
And Soda Pop Pekinski. I like Soda
Pop Pekinski. That's a tough one. Was there a baker in there, too? Was there a
There was the Sandman.
I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe in a different version.
Yeah.
But, yeah. For me, that was a lot of fun.
King Hippo.
A lot of fun.
Good pick. Well, I'm going to pick a game that would definitely be considered a classic, made by Nintendo, released in 1987. I'm talking, of course, the original Metroid. So it's kind of a complicated story, which is something that people probably like about it.
Yeah.
Basically, it follows the story of Samus Aran as she/he. I mean, they don't make it clear, at least initially.
Right.
As she attempts to retrieve the parasitic Metroid organisms that were stolen by the space pirates. So this game really featured a lot of exploration, power-ups that you would get these power-ups, which would then open up different worlds that you couldn't get to, or like you could shoot the freeze door would open, and you go into this whole other place. So a lot of backtracking. And then it also featured something that was really relatively new and novel, which was multiple endings. Mm-hmm. So if you beat the game in a certain amount of time, you would get a better and better ending. One of the endings being you find out that Samus Aran is actually a female.
A lady.
And it was a big
in a bikini.
It was a big surprise because Samus was always referred to as a man in the instruction booklet that you had.
Right.
So that was a big twist.
Big reveal. I like it.
This was often a very difficult game. And it was made more difficult by the insane password system that this game had. I think it had a series of 6 numbers and letters you'd have to enter, and then you'd have to do that 6 times. So I think it was up to like 36 or something. It was an insane amount
really
of numbers. And they featured a lot of things like you'd have a V and you'd have a U. You'd have a 0 and you'd have an O. You'd have a Q and you'd have an O. And it would always be these things. So if you're a 10-year-old kid trying to write these things down, a 12-year-old kid, it was insane. And it was so easy to screw it up, write the wrong thing down, and hours and hours of work go down the drain. So we'd actually save that game a lot. So you'd probably spend more time saving, writing down things, and praying that the things that you wrote down were correct.
It wasn't the day you couldn't like hold up your smartphone and take a photo of it. And
even if you could, tube TVs didn't really have the fidelity to capture the difference between an O and a 0.
When Metroid came out, it was a first-party game, but it wasn't a really popular game. And that's the thing that people tend to forget about in the early days of Nintendo is that games like Mega Man, for instance, were not popular. They had really bad box art, and people didn't know what they were. And it was only sequels had come out, and you know, a little more media, and you get Nintendo Power and stuff, that you'd actually understand what these games were. So when Metroid came out, people didn't know what it was, and it was confusing. So I think we ended up getting that game for Christmas because I think my sister got it. My mom and I went shopping another theme, but it was like one of the few games you could get. I mean, you couldn't buy, you know, you had Mario Brothers, and the really popular games were sold out, so that's the game that we got. And then you come to realize that, oh, this is one of the best games ever made for the system. So that's how we discovered it, and that's how we learned to hate it with the insane, terrible password, key code, whatever.
I had Metroid, and I hated it. I was very frustrated by it. I ended up, I think, selling it to Thomas, and he loved it.
Of course.
And I later came back to the series with Metroid 2 on the SNES.
Yep.
And that, that was much better, but... Yeah. The first Metroid just frustrated the hell out of me.
And you'd have to platforming jump, or you'd spin, and it would be very difficult. You'd fall, and you'd end up falling all the way down through 10 screens that you climbed up through.
Mm-hmm.
It got to be very
frustrating. Games used to be hard. Yep. Games are not hard anymore.
Well, sometimes they were hard just because of bad... You know, you were limited by the mechanics of the game.
So, right. Yeah.
But, like, for
but
the most
people
part...
people suffered through it anyway,
yeah,
so...
it's weird. To this day, games that involve an overworld map... and screens are called Metroidvania games. Yep. They're because they're like that, and the Castlevania games where you had a similar sort of.
Yeah, it's crazy
setup.
How those games have informed and inspired gameplay to this day.
Yep. All right, I'm gonna do my last one.
Please.
If you're done. All right, so I'm gonna go with probably not the best game by any means. I just remember similar to RBI Baseball, playing it with a lot of friends. Super Dodgeball.
Oh, yeah. That's a game that would have made my list. I totally forgot about it.
The Super Nintendo version of the same name was actually better, but this was predated it by like 3 or 4 years. It involved, I think it was 8 countries that you could choose from,
something
and
like.
Each country had like a different special ability. Like either, you know, they could have a power-up quick throw, or they could have like a wavy throw.
They'd throw the ball that would go out of the air, and you could see the shadow, and then it would come down on top of you, and you have to time it to catch it.
Exactly.
If you did, you're out.
And I just, like, I wasn't a bully, but I loved playing dodgeball, like real life dodgeball. Like, I was good at catching the ball, and I was good at throwing. I just remember really liking it. And then to get to do it at home without the risk of injury felt good and rewarding. And this was... a game, again, that you could almost recreate the arcade setup of, you know, you have 5 friends over and winner just keeps getting to go and whoever's up next. And you just kind of fly through the afternoon playing those games. And there was nothing else to it. There was no save system.
No,
there was,
you just play.
You just kind of barrel through it.
Yeah, that game had interesting character design. So you'd have like a skinny... normal size and a fat guy, and the fat guy looked like Frankenstein. He had this giant Frankenstein head, but he could throw the ball hardest, but he just couldn't move very well. And you could do like the double tap to run, and then you double tap to run, you jump, and you jump over the center line. And you have to throw the ball before you land it. I played that game on the Game Boy Advance. They sort of re-released it and played it more recently, which still was probably 10 years ago, but that game, it holds up.
Yeah,
and the cool thing about the Nintendo version was not the cool thing, but it was there was so much going on the screen that like the character because there was I think there was like 4 people in the center and then there's people around the perimeter.
Yeah,
like they would blink.
Yeah,
like they'd be transparent. There's so much action going on the screen that it couldn't handle it, and we would play the F out of that game. I love that game so much. Moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
Jared, do you have any honorable mentions that you want to list? You don't have to describe them, but just tell me what's
I do have a few honorable mentions. Super Mario Brothers, for sure.
Yep.
That was the game that got me to get the system.
Sure.
I played it in the arcade, had to have a Nintendo for it. Kung Fu was another launch game that I played an awful lot. I think we may have bought it the same day we bought the system. I don't think it's a great game, but it has a special...
I played that game in the arcade
a special
a lot.
Soft spot for me, just because it was one of the launch titles that I played an awful lot.
Have you ever seen the Lonely Island's Kung Fu video?
I don't think I have.
It's worth searching for if you've never seen it before. It's basically Andy Samberg talking over the first level from Kung Fu as if he's, you know, the character.
Gotcha.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then my third one would probably be The Goonies 2.
Ah.
Notoriously difficult game from Konami. Also released in 1987. 1987 seems to be about the year where I stopped buying games, I guess.
Sure.
I don't know.
Goonies 2 is too hard, maybe.
I rented it. I didn't own it. This was a game that we rented and probably got about halfway through and couldn't beat it. But I was such a Goonies fan that I had to play it.
Was the plot to find as many Baby Ruth bars as you could?
I know. It was a weird plot, and it was actually a sequel to a Goonies game that came out in Japan.
Yeah.
So it was sort of weird. We always thought it was just like, oh, this is a sequel to the movie because it's Goonies 2.
Yeah, that was
we
weird.
We didn't know.
Happened.
But that was really... It mixed side-scrolling and like an overhead... perspective. It was really, really, really difficult.
Mm.
So that's my honorable mentions.
Well, the games I am going to pick are also not considered classics, but to me they are. The first one I'm going to pick is Ice Hockey, the original Nintendo Ice Hockey.
Yeah, didn't that have the special controller you could get with
it? Well, so yeah, when they released
like
that,
a 360
they had a couple different controllers. They had the Pro joystick that actually you had to plug into both
Yeah.
Both ports, so two people couldn't play with that.
No, and you had to like switch back and forth. Yep.
So
second
you got
player.
The four score, which was the thing that expanded it to four different.
And then they also had the Max controller, which had like the sliding.
Yeah,
dot,
that's what it was.
Which actually was worse. It was much harder to play with that.
It's terrible.
The only game that was good for was track and field, the discus throw, where you had to go in a circle.
So the reason why I mention ice hockey is because we put a lot of time into that, but it really strikes me as the first game that ever made my hands hurt so bad I wanted to cry, because you're pushing on it so much back and forth that the terrible controllers, which were squared off at 90 degrees, would just push into the meaty part of your thumb to the point where I actually would have bruises on my hands from playing ice hockey so much.
Yeah, that was bad.
That
and
was
the,
vicious.
And the D-pad
probably why
was
the
sharp,
SNES had,
sharp corners, too.
Probably why the SNES had rounded corners.
That's why you don't ever see controllers with 90 degrees anymore.
Before the SNES came out, though, they introduced the top-loading the NES.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it had controllers that look identical to the SNES ones,
just
except
just rounded and
they
less buttons.
Are only have, the round... But they're rounded.
The second game I'm going to pick is by no means a classic. It's Rambo. And I got that because when I first got my Nintendo, my dad bought me a bunch of a game or two at the PX. Once again, games were hard to find. And he working for the military, he could get into the PX and they would have discounted Nintendo games. Surprise, Rambo was there. And surprise, it was one of them. And I played that a lot. Not a great game, but...
It was what you had.
Soft spot in my heart. And the final game was a game that my good buddy Aaron, who's been on the show once, and I, we rented it at Mr. Movies, a local video game store, or a VHS store that started to rent Nintendo games, called Rygar.
Oh, yeah.
And it was...
I played the arcade game. I was very disappointed in the NES adaptation.
NES, not close to the arcade, but that was one that it had. That also had a bit of, like, choose-your-own-path to go in certain directions and role-play-esque type elements with different weapons you could get.
And that arcade was not like that at all. But
And we played that, like, one whole night. I spent the night over his house, and we played it till we beat it, which is a common theme with anybody that plays Nintendo games. Yep. Adam, your... honorable selections.
I just wanted to mention Battletoads for being the fucking hardest game
ever
to be created. It's like so weird because it has like Teenage Ninja Turtle sort of stylings and stuff, and then winds up being
meaner
just,
than S.
It's It is still to this day looked at as one of the hardest video games ever created. And speaking of hard games, Russian Attack. Is,
that was an arcade game for me. I played that a lot.
Russian Attack, I thought was called Russian, like, you know, people from Russia.
Yeah.
Russian Attack, until I don't know how long. I thought it was always called.
Confused by the play on words, weren't you?
And, you think that was actually, and I'm just now getting that.
Yeah, it was a double entendre. Yeah.
I don't think it's that. It's something else. And that was a really hard game, too.
Very difficult.
The enemies are always coming at you. You're always moving forward.
Yep. Sometimes and you're always dying.
You're always dying.
With three continues.
Yep.
Contra also would be a game that I would have to put up my list.
That's the first time I ever entered the Konami code was in that game. Yep.
A lot of action in that game. Like straight-ahead, mature-type action.
And really... Cool memorable music. Yep. Not good music, but memorable music.
Anything else on your list, or is that it?
I had just games that you couldn't pronounce the name of, and like back then you didn't have the internet to be like, how do people pronounce this?
Yeah, like what is this?
Faxanadu and Astyanax.
I don't remember that one. Mm-mm. I remember Faxanadu.
Yeah, it was a role-playing game.
Yep.
That was actually a game that I kind of still had my NES, but I hadn't played it in a few years, and I sort of kind of got back into it, and I picked up Faxanadu used from like a GameStop or something, or probably Funko,
yeah.
And I played it a little bit, didn't get too far, but kind of rekindled my joy of RPGs on the system, which the SNES would definitely get more love in that direction.
Real quick, I just wanted to mention a probably not super legal website called Nesbox.com, NESBOX.com.
Make sure it's very clear.
It lets you play pretty much every NES and SNES game through the browser. You don't have to download an emulator or anything like that.
Very interesting. Well, guys, you think this was a successful segment?
Yeah, I think so.
But we've got many, many, many video game systems we can cover, so we'll definitely come back to our
CDI.
Scope video game essentials in future shows.
Sega Saturn, you want to tease your Sega Saturn pick?
Oh, my goodness.
Your Master System pick?
It would be
Spy versus Spy.
Of course. I was going to say Madden 96, the one Saturn Madden game. Glorious. All right, guys, let's take a quick break. We'll be back with Coming Soon and more Scope after this.
We now return to the Scope, just for the hell of it.
Under the Scope. All right, we're back under the Scope, and of course, that means Coming Soon. Uh-oh. I can't answer it.
You can't answer it.
Look, it's Turk in his hot dog costume.
Yeah. Doesn't seem to mind.
They'll leave a message.
Coming soon. We've got some music coming out December 10th. All right. We've got Damn Funk and Snoopzilla. Is that Snoop's new name? It's Snoopzilla? He's not Snoop Lion anymore?
I don't even know.
All right. Days of Funk. We've got Danny Glover's son, Childish Gambino, because the internet. That's not Danny Glover's son. That's what's his face?
Donald Glover. Glover. Yeah.
Donald.
Apparently, that's more important than BN Community. Jerkface. Go ahead.
Movies. We've got The Hobbit, the previously mentioned The Desolation of Smaug. Tyler Perry's A Madea Christmas. How has this not already been a thing?
Yeah, it's a lot of Madea films. Yeah. This, you think it would be right there, right in the top of the list.
I assumed he's doing all the Ernest movies, and Ernest Saves Christmas was, I think, the second one.
Yeah, I think so. Madea went to jail, so.
Saving Mr. Banks. You guys saw that?
We did.
We did see it.
It's a limited release on December 13th.
They're just making sure that it gets in for Oscar consideration.
Do you guys think that it has a chance?
Maybe a couple acting nods. Yeah. Probably not wins, but that's about it.
And as I did more research on the real story behind it, it made me like the movie a lot less. So even if the acting was good.
Really? That sounds like something I said to you.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, you didn't say it first, so.
DVD and Blu-ray.
I said it in IM first.
We've got Despicable Me 2. Mm-hmm. Shane, I heard Despicable Me 1 was a really good family kids movie.
I loved it.
Despicable Me 2, what are your feelings?
Not as good.
All right. Futurama Volume 8 and Mary Poppins, the 50th Anniversary Edition. Oh, timed well with the Mr. Banks.
Yeah, Disney would never
that's called
capitalize
synergy.
On that synergy.
Nope.
And video games, we've got Wii Fit U for the Wii U.
Yes.
For some reason, that's really hard.
Wii Fit U.
Wii Fit U.
They wait to December 8th to do it.
Interesting.
I don't know why.
After, because you've gained some weight from Thanksgiving, and you want to lose it for those Christmas bikini shots.
I love it.
Because who doesn't do a bikini shot
Shane,
at Christmas?
Yes.
While we did talk about what's coming soon.
Yes, we did.
We have one more thing to mention.
We do.
And that is your pick for Hit It or Miss It.
I Hit It or Miss It, guys. This is the time.
Hit It or Miss It.
Took you three shows to get back to that.
Sorry.
We either pick something we want to really recommend or something we want to take a dump on. And I'm taking a big old dump on R. Kelly's Black Panties album. Not an R. Kelly guy. I think he's weird.
Wait. You like to take a dump on panties, huh?
You know, that's all sorts of my quirks come out.
I have an important question.
Yes.
Have you ever heard the remix to Ignition?
No.
What?
I'm not an R. Kelly guy, so.
Doesn't matter. Are you a human being? Are you a human man?
I am not a human man.
Jesse Thorne, host of Bullseye and Jordan Jesse Go, is a huge Ignition remix fan.
Okay, I will go listen to that.
It is one of the best songs ever made. Okay. And I'm saying that unsarcastically, unironically, unjokingly.
I don't believe that from you. Nothing is any of that when it comes out of your mouth.
All right.
But if Jared says it, it must be true.
It's good.
All right. Well, I say avoid R. Kelly. If that bothers you too much, then avoid Tyler Perry's. But
jeez. Wow. I guess we know which general direction you're telling people to head away from.
Yeah. Don't watch any of the non-white stuff.
Well, I didn't say Damn Funk and Snoopzilla. That's my recommended.
Snoopzilla. I think I get to the bottom of this. Because really, is he going to be in one of those memes that says, this is not even my final form? Is that what's going to happen here? He's continuing to evolve? From dog to lion
to Phoenix.
Zilla?
Snoop Phoenix.
Okay.
He's a Pokemon.
He is. He's like Charizard. Is that it?
You tell me. Are you done?
I think it's it. I'm exhausted, Jared.
All right.
It's cold. It's a cold December weekend. Let's move on here.
Oh, we're almost to the end.
I know. It's crazy. So this is the time when we check out our viewer commentary.
We do have a comment.
Okay, do it.
This is from a longtime friend of the show, John Norton, host of MetroBuzz Podcast at MetroBuzzPodcast.com. He says, I thought this was a great episode. By the way, this is about episode 157. I thought this was a great episode. It's just sometimes when I watch kind of get the sense that the Scope guys don't really care that much anymore. You know, it's like they're just kind of phoning it in. Not this time or anything. No, this show was great. But like, I think what they tend to forget is that we're giving our time to watch these episodes, and they really need to bring a little more than they do, because otherwise it's like, why are we watching? Hey, you guys nailed it this time, though. Amazing episode. But just sometimes?
Wow.
Look at that. The dramatic reenactment of John Norton's comment about the soft-talking bit we did to
Adam. We need to get him on the air to see if he actually thinks we're phoning it in, because if he does, he's right.
That episode, yes.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. I mean, we might have been phoning in the content, but I think the fun stuff that happened in the moment was definitely not phoning it in. That was pure comedic bliss.
I don't remember what 157 was.
We soft-talked you.
We soft-talked you the whole time. What we do is we take other famous comedy bits, and then we just rip them off, and then we take them as our own, and we act like we're comic
geniuses. In a not as good way.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right. In our defense, I think that... No, was that... No, we did the Halloween episode third. That cycle was weird.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Timing was weird. We had Al in... And
it's hard to pin down, Jerry.
Hard to pin down. Anyway, if you got something you want to pin on us, whether you think we're phoning it in or if you think that we're comedic geniuses, you can write in at comments@thescopeshow.com. Call the voicemail line 612-21-SCOPE. That's 612-217-2673.
All right.
What? I'm not done. I got a whole spiel here. You going to
no,
try to cut
saying,
me off?
I just was going to add more to it.
Okay. What are you going to say?
I'm going to say, how else can they contact us?
It's like we've never done it before. You can check us out on Facebook, Twitter, or Tumblr. All those links are over at the website. Website.
And now we started to say swear words like Sean Connery.
The website at thescopeshow.com. Or if you're on YouTube, you can like this episode. You can comment on this episode below. Or you can subscribe to us. Or even share it if you feel like sharing it. It's kind of long. Maybe you don't want to share it. That's all right. We don't care. Whatever.
We don't.
Back to you, Shane.
All right. Well, Jared and Adam, a terrific show. Guys, we're off. Possibly. We might be going right into a new show. We'll have to see.
I think we might be.
So stay tuned for that. We do have the holidays coming up, so our schedules could get a little dicey, but we'll keep you informed.
I think more than anything, you might see a longer gap between Christmas and when new episodes show up in January.
So there we go.
So expect that.
Expect the unexpected, as they say in Big Brother. So, for Adam and Jared, this is Shane. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with more Scope. Shane goes up.
Ladies and gentlemen, we find ourselves once again at the end. I hope you've enjoyed our time together. I know I have. Fear not, Scope faithful. Days shall pass as if they were but a moment. And Jared, Adam, and Shane will return with another thrilling episode. Until then, send your comments to comments@thescopeshow.com. Or leave a voicemail message by dialing
612-21-SCOPE. That's 612-217-2673.
Thanks for listening, faithful fans. This is Tony Partington saying...
Buenas tardes.
Tune in next time to another terrific edition of The Scope.